At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Thank you for listening. Busy show this week. We kick things off with John Oran from Sports Business Journal. So much sports media news this week. The way the John Gruden thing ended up playing out, ended up getting fired by the Raiders for the emails he sent while he was with ESPN. Then Adam Schefter gets dragged into the mess because he's sending stories to Bruce Allen asking for a full edit. Big Monday Night Football wild card playoff news, how that ties in with Peyton and Eli. A lot of stuff on NFL Sunday Ticket. We get into all that with John Oran. Then Alan Sepinwall, the phenomenal TV critic for Rolling Stone, joins the pod to talk about The Many Saints of Newark, The Sopranos, and a couple of other TV things, Squid Game, and a little stuff on Seinfeld. And then Train of Thoughts with my buddy Sal Licata, where I tell you a story about Larry David and this podcast and me trying to book Larry and how that played out, and get into a couple of other things with Sal and have some fun with him. So John Oran from Sports Business Journal, Alan Sepinwall from Rolling Stone, and then Train of Thoughts all in this pod. Before we get to it, remember, old episodes, previous episodes in the archives if you've missed any. Kyle Brandt from Good Morning Football was on last week. He was phenomenal. He auditioned with Peyton and Eli, and he talked about that. Stephen A. Smith, 2 weeks ago, AEW's Bryan Danielson, formerly known as Daniel Bryan in WWE. Jimmy Kimmel, Tony Romo, all recent guests on the SI Media Podcast. Go into the archives, check them out, subscribe, and leave a review on Apple. All right, here we go. Kicking things off, John Oran from Sports Business Journal right here on the SI Media Podcast. All right, joining me now, a man many thought would never appear again on the SI Media Podcast, because he has just launched his own podcast, the Marshan and Oran Sports Media Podcast, but now he's on the SI Media Podcast, not to be confused at Richard Deitch's Media Podcast, John Oran from Sports Business Journal. John?
Jimmy, our podcast, that it was with the lawyers for months. You should hear the number of times they were like, no, you can't do that title. No, you can't do that title. Everything is under copyright.
I was going to ask what kind of battle took place since Marshan got top billing. It's the Marshan and Oran podcast. Did you have to like concede? Was there negotiations? How did he jump you?
Everybody tells me that it was alphabetical. And so I'm going with that. He got me with the A in Andrew as well.
Did you have like other names, like, you know, wacky names in mind, or, and then you settle on your last names? How did that go down?
So we were thinking about doing, what we really wanted to do is the sports media reporters. And the lawyers said no to that, like almost immediately, because it sounds too similar to the sports reporters, which is what we were actually, what we were going after. And I'm like, how did Pardon My Take? Like, I'm like, I thought that that would have allowed you to call it anything. You know, we tried like Inside Sports Media, now too close to Inside Sports, an homage to, you know, John Walsh and stuff. But
because Barstool is smart, they do it and then deal with the ramifications afterwards. That's the way to do it. Yeah. Once you get lawyers involved, you're screwed.
I thought with the New York Post lawyers, I thought we'd be okay with that.
Right, right. I'm surprised you couldn't call it the Sports Media Reporters.
Yeah, that surprised me too. Yeah. Anything with Inside, Inside Sports Media was a no. We couldn't do anything with Inside, but we ended up our names are on the billing, so we're pretty happy with it.
I was amazed how many tweets I got from people asking if you guys would ever be on this podcast again. They thought there'd be some sort of ban, or I don't know if they thought you guys wouldn't come on or I wouldn't have you on, but I don't know. It never even crossed my mind. I was okay, doesn't make a difference to me if they have their own podcast. I want them on mine. So if they'll do it, I'm willing.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? People are like, oh, so are you going to still go on train? I go, yeah, if he asks, definitely. I love coming on this thing.
Well, this was quite a week to have you on because I don't know if you get as wrapped up in it. I don't know. Being that I'm writing every day, I have to say when I had to write this morning, I was sort of beaten down from all this. This whole week with the Gruden, the emails, the Schefter, it's not a pleasant topic at all. I mean, you have Gruden saying these vile things. He had to go. I mean, I know everyone's all about what about this? And what about this? And this play, he had to go. There's no ifs. He had to go. But there is this thing about losing your job because of someone going through your emails that is still sits uneasy with me. So the whole thing just is really dirty and messy and ugly.
Yeah, I like the way that you open that, Jimmy, because it as a starting point, Gruden had to lose his job. And I'm not shedding a tear that he got taken out of the Tampa Bay Ring of Honor. That is the standard. He absolutely did. But I do think it is worth questioning, out of all of those emails, the only ones that came out paint Gruden in a bad light. I mean, there's another story there about who's releasing those emails, why they're releasing those emails, and why they targeted John Gruden. Because I'm pretty certain in all those emails, you're going to see a lot of bad stuff.
And this is what I hate about this story, because I think it's fairly obvious why they targeted John Gruden. I mean, he had some very rough things to say about Roger Goodell. But the flip side of that is you want it to be where the NFL wanted him out because of what he said about gay people and minorities. And you can't say what he said about Demaurice Smith sending naked pictures of cheerleaders. That's why he had to go. But obviously, it seems like he went because the NFL made sure he went because he called Goodell names.
I don't think I'm there to where I'm blaming the NFL. I don't know who to blame, but there is somebody that selectively released some emails in order to get John Gruden fired, and it was successful.
And it hasn't gotten enough coverage, and maybe it doesn't warrant it, but it is to me, and for what we do, our purposes. When he sent these emails, he was an employee of ESPN. Now, I don't blame ESPN. I'm not saying they have any role in any of this. But I don't even think that makes ESPN look bad. But it is, this is a guy doing Monday Night Football, one of the marquee events for the NFL. And then hours before he's sending these emails, it's just the whole thing is just ugly. Ugly all around.
I guarantee that if he were still on Monday Night Football with ESPN, he'd be fired as well. I don't hold ESPN responsible for an employee sending an email. I wasn't even sure. Was it on ESPN.com account?
This is the one question I've had that I have not been able to get an answer to. Did the NFL or the investigators see Gruden's emails to Bruce Allen because they were going through Bruce Allen's emails, not John Gruden? So was John Gruden sending these offensive emails to Bruce Allen's NFL account, Washington account? Then it was, by then it was the Redskins, so it might have been Redskins.com, whatever it was. I would assume he had to be sending those to those accounts, not his Gmail account. NFL to get them.
They were part. I would assume they were sent to the official accounts. I mean, as they were part of the lawsuit because Daniel Snyder, the owner, thought that Bruce Allen was orchestrating a, you know, a bad PR campaign against him. And so
then, I mean, another layer of stupidity added into, you know, all of this.
And then, I'm from DC. Everything Dan Snyder touches at some point comes back to blow up.
Well, and that's the interesting flip side of this is now everyone's sort of demanding the 650,000 emails be released. They want to know what's in there about Daniel Snyder. And I get that. I totally get it. But it does seem like there are people who on one minute are saying, you know, we don't love the fact that, you know, someone's losing a job over private emails, and then it's release the emails. We need to see all the emails. I mean, which is it exactly? It's very complicated.
Yeah. Well, it's not the end of the story. I mean, the story's still out there. The NFL did come out and say that they're not going to be releasing the rest of the emails. But we'll see if there are leaks out there to make that happen.
Do you think prediction in a year, maybe 2 years, John Gruden gets a media job somewhere?
No, I don't see how that happens. I think that what he wrote and what was uncovered I can't imagine him that happening unless it's with a bar stool or with something along those lines. This is going to be a pretty long penance for him.
See, I don't listen. You're not going to see John Gruden on CBS or NBC or ESPN, but I do think, especially now where there's all these opportunities with the gambling stuff going on, like someone will hire him, I bet, you know, maybe in a year, you know, there's all these weird deals like, you know, like Trey Wingo's like a spokesman for some gambling. Like I could see Gruden getting some sort of deal like that in a year or something. He's not putting him on like, you know, CBS with,
yeah, my original answer was about, you know, CBS and being a part of a football team.
Not happening.
There will be something out there. It's not going to be nearly as lucrative as what he had at ESPN.
Right. And then Schefter obviously got dragged into it this morning, Wednesday morning. It comes out that he sent a story to Bruce Allen, the then president of the Washington football team, and said, you know, Mr. Editor, what are your changes here? What did you make of that?
I don't know, Jimmy. Marchand actually said this in a column. Like, we don't know the context of what he was saying, and I would like to know the context. It did appear that calling Bruce Allen Mr. Editor was tongue in cheek and not serious. I will tell you this: people ask me. PR people generally ask me all the time, hey, do you mind sending over that story? I just to check it out. And it's not even a close call. You don't send, right. you don't send a whole story. And I always have the same line to them. I said, if I sent that to you and somebody found out, I'd be fired. And I truly believe that to be the case. So I think I'm not sure. Again, I don't know the context. Was this like a one-time deal? Because he was writing about, you know, the CBA, and it was getting to be somewhat difficult. Did he do it with Bruce Allen, and did he also do it with the Players Association? I bet if he did do this, he's a good reporter. I bet it wouldn't surprise me that he would do it elsewhere. There's just not a lot of context to what he did, but I do know that I don't send out stories. And none of the reporters I've ever worked with or the outlets that I worked with would tolerate me sending out stories. And, you know, to all the PR folks out there, don't ask me. I'm not going to do it. I do talk, you know, like people aren't surprised by what's going in. I do talk to people about right. Hey, I'm characterizing things this way. You know, there's a difference between talking over the phone and having that fight beforehand, you know, as opposed to after it comes out.
Right.
But yeah, they're just kind of sending the story. It surprised me that Schefter did that.
Now, shortly before we're taping this, we taped this podcast, you were with a bunch of ESPN people, including ESPN president Jimmy Pitaro. What do you know? Do you have any information, any scuttlebutt on how ESPN feels about this Schefter story?
Well, ESPN put out a statement and they didn't do much more than that statement. But ESPN, look, Schefter works for ESPN. And I don't mean is employed by ESPN. I mean, they like him. they see a benefit to him. And this doesn't work journalistically, but they see him as somebody that was in this scenario that was trying to get something right. And so he was sort of passing it and to make sure the facts were checked and that he was trying to get something right. That's their spin. I think that they view this, and I think Schefter probably views this as a, you know, I don't know if they, let me restate that, Jimmy. Mm-hmm. They hope that this is a one, maybe two, maybe 3 day story that'll be blown away. And then they, you know, it'll be forgotten about in 2 weeks. And I think that that's sort of the track that they're going on with it.
That's funny, because I wrote today in Train of Thoughts that it'll be gone in 24 hours. So
24. Yeah. I said two weeks. I probably should have said 2 days. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll move on to the next. Listen, but this is what I wrote.
It's like it's Schefter. It's ESPN. It's like it's this confluence of it's journalism ethics. It's a confluence of things that are getting people to, you know, go crazy.
What I wrote today, though, is that, you know, when I first saw it, I just, you know, I kind of shrugged my shoulders because I don't think of Adam Schefter as this hardcore journalist. Like he does transactions. He does who's getting fired, who's getting hired, who's this guy signing with this team, this guy got traded. He's not doing like, let's get into the NFL steroid problem. So I'm not saying what he did was right. Like you said, no one sends a whole story to someone and says, make any change you want. But, you know, there were people on Twitter saying, you know, what a bad look. This is going to come back to bite him. He's going to get fired. No, he's not. There's no chance of that happening over this. It's just not like, you know,
in terms of the context, did he make the changes? Did Allen offer changes? Did he make those changes? Like we don't know, but that starting point where he is a pretty bad place for any kind of journalist, an info guy like him or an investigative guy. It's a pretty bad luck.
Now, while it seems like there's a lot of doom and gloom there at ESPN, I mean, you know, Schefter, Gruden sending that email while he's employed with them, Sage Steele last week. The company does have some good news where they just signed a 5-year deal with the NFL to air a wild card game on Monday night for the next 5 years. And they announced, you know, for this year, Mannings will be doing their Manning cast on ESPN2. You know, I've seen some rumblings from fans who don't like it. To me, it's a no-brainer just in terms of I think you're going to get a minimum. I mean, maybe I'm, you know, I think you get at least 5 million more people watching a game on a Monday night at 8:15 than a Saturday at 1. I mean, this is essentially the NFL swapping out the Saturday at 1 slot for Monday at 8. You'll get wild card weekend games at 4 and 8 on Saturday, 1, 4 and 8 on Sunday, and then 8:15 Monday night on ESPN. You know, maybe fans don't like it because it's not on a weekend on a Saturday, but in terms of viewership, I think this is a no-brainer for the league and for ESPN.
Yeah, I think it makes sense for the league and for ESPN. Jimmy Pitaro just kind of mentioned the certainty where they know for the next 5 years, starting with this season, exactly when the playoff game that they have is going to run. And the fact that it's on Monday night and they have the whole Monday night schedule, it just adds some certainty to that schedule, makes it easier for them to sell against it. It makes it just makes things easier internally for them. So they went after the Monday night one hard, and they really wanted it. But to me, Jimmy, the thing that I find most interesting about this is that 4 years ago, I was writing story after story about how mad the NFL was at ESPN. And that was a relationship that was as bad as any relationship between a national network and a league. And Pitaro's come in, he's really repaired that relationship to such an extent that, you know, they got this deal done. The Mannings, you know, they renewed, or they're back in the Super Bowl rotation. I mean, so it's been a total U-turn, a total reversal from 4 years ago. And when we talk about like this deal, that's sort of the main thing that popped out of me, as opposed to, you know, one early round playoff game.
Do we know if the wild card game will be one of the 10 that Peyton and Eli do, or did ESPN maybe fork over some money and now they're going to do 11 this year?
I don't think that they are. We asked them that question, and they're not going to increase the number of games this year. And when I say we, Marchand and I had Pitaro on our pod, and they're not going to increase it this year, but once the season's over, they're going to sit down, and you can pretty much bet that ESPN's going to try to convince Peyton to do it more often.
That's going to be a fascinating chess match, because everything I've heard from multiple people is Peyton and Eli don't want to do 17 weeks, which is why they're not doing 17 weeks.
If they don't want to do 17 weeks, they're not going to do 17 weeks. I mean,
right.
What Pitaro said was that they like being in business with Peyton Manning. And so, you know, you give and take on that.
Yeah. And then, and obviously the Manning things is a huge success. And then
that's the only way I watch Monday Night Football.
I mean, listen, that's how I've watched it this year. But I think, like, for a wild card game, I'm watching the regular feed, because I don't like the only negative for me with the Manning cast. The only negative is that you don't really know what's going on with penalties, review, down and distance, maybe replay, all that. That part of it gets cut out. So for a big game, I'll probably watch the regular telecast. But for all the Monday nights with all these games, I've been locked in to the Mannings for every minute so far.
Yeah, the most intriguing thing to me is the Lions and the Packers. It was such a bad game, and that was the one that McAfee was on in the fourth quarter. And that conversation was so entertaining. I stuck with that game much longer than I would have any other year. I mean, I would have been out in the third quarter when it became obvious the Packers were going to win.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, they could not have asked for it to go any better than it has over their first 3 weeks. And then it kicks off again week 7. And the NHL returned to ESPN this week. And, I think that's a huge plus for the network, just in terms of, you know, in the streaming world, they're going to put a bunch of games on ESPN Plus. I'm sure they'll get tons of hockey fans to subscribe. So not all doom and gloom for ESPN this week. Some bright spots.
No, and for hockey too. The night after ESPN launched, Turner has their doubleheader as well. And so for the National Hockey League, they're finally with two broadcasters. They're finally getting marketed to the both broadcasters. One is an entertainment network. One's an all sports network. They're on digital, so they hope that they're getting a lot younger. It's a pretty good week for the NHL. They're pretty pumped about moving forward.
Yeah, it's good for the league, good for the sport, good for the fans, for sure, to be back on ESPN.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I have to ask you this every single time you're on this podcast, and I will
guess?
Yes.
The cable bundle.
No.
Oh.
No. NFL Sunday Ticket. A few weeks ago, we heard Amazon. Then a couple of weeks ago, we heard Apple. I've said this on this podcast a million times. When I talk to my friends and people on Twitter, all the sports media thing they want to know more than anything is, what is going to happen with Sunday Ticket? Do we have any sort of information? I read also they may start selling individual games. Where do we stand with Sunday Ticket?
They still have not officially started to negotiate for it yet. What I've been hearing is that DirecTV was considered out for the longest time. The NFL and AT&T, which owned DirecTV, were at odds. DirecTV has since spun off. AT&T is still an owner, but it's no longer, the NFL no longer is negotiating with AT&T. They're negotiating straight with DirecTV. DirecTV wants to keep it. The NFL likes being on DirecTV. If I'm going to make a prediction, my prediction is that DirecTV is going to keep a part of Sunday Ticket. The main reason, a main reason is that Sunday Ticket is set up around all these eating establishments, bars, restaurants, and they're not set up to stream yet. And that would be it would just be so different. It's doable, but, right. Having everything there. And then you're going
to just I'm just imagining a bar, like, let's say it went to Amazon. So you're in a bar, a sports bar, streaming Amazon Prime Sunday Ticket, and it starts buffering. I mean, you got people drinking. It's not going to be a good mix.
You got some tipsy folks that want that want to see the game.
They see that wheel spinning and the word buffering, and the beer is going to go flying right through the television.
So I feel like DirecTV has a pretty good shot at keeping it. But
you mean keeping it in addition to?
Yes, in addition to, because the NFL does want to go streaming. And they're looking at streaming. Jimmy Pitaro today said that he is really interested in the package. You mentioned Apple. I've heard them. I don't rate them too highly. I think they're not likely to get it. I know Amazon really wants it. I think that CBS and or NBC are going to make a big push because they have these streaming services and Paramount Plus and Peacock that they want to build off of. And the best way, all of these executives feel that the best way to build a media company like a streaming service is through a sport like the NFL. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did it. I think you're going to see a really big bidding war for that other part. One thing that I'm going to be taking a look at is that, a lot of people don't get DirecTV, and so they would subscribe to let's just say ESPN Plus to get it. Mm-hmm. The real thing that I'm interested in finding out is what the price point ESPN Plus would sell it at, because Fox and CBS don't want Sunday Ticket to all of a sudden become you get it for your subscription or free, and if that becomes too big, it devalues the packages that they both just paid more than $2 billion a year for.
Interesting. Do you think there's anything to the rumblings that maybe they would sell individual games?
Possibly. Or you sell if you're a displaced Cowboys fan, you sell just, those games. I think that once you go and you start to stream, they're more likely to do things like that. That still is so far in advance. It's likely that something like that will happen. That's where technology is going, but nobody's made any kind of steps that way yet.
Yeah, if they ever did that, I am curious. I wonder what for the fan out there, what would you pay for a game on a Sunday afternoon? It's very interesting because I don't know. I'm trying to even think for example, 2 weeks ago here in New York was a complete an utter disaster because it was the 2 weeks the New York teams won, but I really don't give a shit if the teams win. On Sunday at 1 o'clock in New York, the Jets were on CBS playing, who did they beat? The Titans, and the Giants were on Fox playing the Saints. I didn't want to watch 1 second of either of those games. Like, I would have paid money to be able to watch another game. So the question is, how much would I have paid? And I don't know what the answer to that question is, but even this Sunday, I don't know. I'm trying to think.
Wait, are you saying you don't get like NFL Red Zone? I'm shocked.
I get Red Zone, but I've gone through this. I hate watching the Red Zone.
Oh.
Because the Red Zone is showing me every touchdown from every game. I'm not interested in a touchdown from a shitty game. I'm interested, like, if you have, here, I'll just give you an example here. Like this Sunday at 1, for instance, the Chargers are playing the Ravens. Okay. I'd be way more interested in watching a play from the 50-yard line in that game than a red zone play in a game between the Jaguars and, you know, whoever. Yeah. So that's why I'm not a red zone fan.
You know, it's funny. I'm not a particular,
because I don't play fantasy football either. That's a big reason, I think.
Just, I'm not a particular red zone fan either, because right. I like the story arc of a game. You know.
Yes, that's the phrasing. Story arc of a game. Yes, that is it right there. That's, you just hit it right on the head. Yeah, perfectly. Yeah. So the Chargers are playing the Ravens at 1 o'clock Sunday. I don't need to see Texans Colts highlights on the Red Zone channel. I don't care what's going on in the game. So that's why I'm the one person in America who doesn't love the red zone, but I need streaming, DirecTV streaming. I need it badly. Do we know? Cause there's always been this inconsistency about this is the last year of DirecTV exclusivity, or they have one more year of exclusivity. Do we know at least that? What's the story with that?
DirecTV has one more year. They have this season and then one more season.
Son of a bitch.
Sorry, man.
Oh my God.
That's and then you're going to be, people are going to be furious because they think they're going to have access to red zone, but it's going to be cost prohibitive. Like when the people are going to get sticker shock with it.
You think so?
I'm virtually certain about that.
So like right now, I think I pay like $14 a month for red zone. I hate it, but I have it. You think it's going to go up even more than that?
What's that per year?
Well, I mean, I get it for September, October, November, December, 14 times four.
Oh yeah, so, I mean it'll have to be triple digits. I think.
For red zone.
I mean, I'm guessing. I have no. This is just talking about it. But
you might want to retract that, because anyone listening to this is now going to be so pissed they're not going to listen to the Marshan and Oren podcast.
I'm not advocating for it. I'm just saying where I think it's going to go.
You angered a lot of people right there. You telling people
they want to be free.
If you're telling people there's a scenario out there where they may pay triple digits for red zone.
You said red zone channel or?
Red zone. I thought that's
No. I'm sorry.
You meant Sunday ticket. Well, of course, Sunday ticket. Listen, Sunday ticket now is like $400, but $300,
$400. That's why I was surprised at what you said. I'm sorry.
No. Yeah. I'm saying the red zone channel costs like $14 a month. And I thought you said that was going to be cost.
Yeah. I thought you were talking a ticket. That was my mistake.
We should edit all this out, but we'll leave it in and you could hear just.
Yeah. You could hear how stupid I am. Awesome.
But yeah, I mean, Sunday ticket. So then let's do it this way. Sunday ticket now, I think, is three something. You think 2 years from now that price goes up significantly, or
at worst it'll stay right around $300, $400.
Yeah. I don't mind it. I think.
I mean, it's not going to go to $1,000. I can't imagine. Right. But it's not going to be so cheap that it's a no brainer decision.
Well, my thing is this: I don't want to sound arrogant or whatever. I'll pay whatever it is. Just let me get access to the games without having to have DirecTV. I mean, if you tell me there's a streaming service for Sunday ticket that's $300, okay. If it's $400, okay, I'll pay it. Let's go. I want to be able to watch whatever game I want. That's all I'm asking. But I need it to do it without DirecTV. That's the issue. That's the issue. So one more year. Oh God, that's a bummer. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on, even now that you're a competitor.
I know. We're tough competitors, man. No, I appreciate you having me, because I was getting comments on Twitter about like bad blood between Deitch and me or you and me. Like, no.
I have every intention to keep you and Andrew in the rotation.
All right, we got to do our Christmas show. We did it like two in a row, and then stopped doing it a while.
Well, COVID came last year. That was the whole thing. So just give people a little info on your pod. Will you be having, I know you had Van Pelt the first week, you have Jimmy Pitaro this week. Are you guys going to have a guest every week?
No. So our pod, it drops every single Wednesday. And our plan is, I mean, you get great guests, but our plan is to get really top level guests. So Van Pelt, we think, is a top guest. Jimmy Pitaro, the head of ESPN, possibly the most powerful person in sports media, certainly in sports media, maybe sports business. But we don't want to do a guest every week. Like sometimes we just want to get in there and we just want to talk about the issues of the day. And go through that way. So
do you guys have a booker, or are you booking it yourself?
Oh, we just book it ourselves. Do you have a booker?
Do I have a booker? I wish. Okay. I was going to say, if you don't have a booker, make sure you have some Xanax handy, because the anxiety you're going to get when you don't have a guest is pretty intense.
I got to give you credit.
I'm the booker.
Your Romo stuff was awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Did you hear CBS?
Tony, Did I hear from? No, I did not hear from CBS. As a matter of fact, did not. Oh well, but Tony was good.
No, Tony's, he was great. That was good. The end around. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. We're not competitor. Well, I mean, maybe we are, but you'll still be on. Everyone can relax and check out the Marshan and O-Ran podcast as well. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
Anytime.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, joining me now, SI Media podcast regular, had to have him on because he's the ultimate person to talk about The Sopranos with The Many Saints of Newark out now. We had to have Alan Sepinwall, chief TV critic for Rolling Stone, on the pod. Alan, how are you?
I'm good, Jimmy. How you doing?
I'm good, and I look forward to digging into The Many Saints of Newark with you. Before we get to it, just a couple of random TV things, because that'll be the bulk of the conversation. Do I have to watch Squid Game?
You don't have to watch anything, Jimmy. There's, you may have heard, there's a lot of television out there.
I'm feeling very left out, though.
Yeah. It's fun. It's also really dark. It's incredibly violent, but it moves quickly. I feel like a lot of these streaming phenomenons feel really padded and kind of dragged out. This didn't. I watched it very quickly over a couple of days once I realized that I was several weeks behind on the latest phenomenon. And I liked it, and it feels very current. It looks great. It's maybe not as deep as it sometimes thinks it is, but it's deep enough to be interesting over 9 episodes.
And this was just a show that was put on Netflix with sort of no fanfare, no promotion, no hullabaloo, and just word of mouth.
It went viral. It can happen. Yeah. I mean, I think they were promoting it heavily in South Korea, but it was not like they expected it to be this big global phenomenon that it's turned out to be. But the way it works is, you know, once they realize that people are watching, then like suddenly you load up the Netflix app and you will see Squid Game on the homepage, you know, and you go from there.
All right. I'm going to have to check it out, I guess. If I were going to start a drama to get into, but and my the two shows I was debating between picking are Billions or Succession, which should I watch?
It depends. I like both shows. They're similar in a lot of ways in that they're both about like monstrous rich people just sort of playing these power games. And there's no one who's really all that likable. I think Billions is a bit lighter. It moves quicker. There's also more seasons of it and more episodes. Succession goes a little bit deeper. It's also, I think, a funnier show. I think both shows are pretty funny and, you know, witty. I was sort of a very late conversion to Succession, but I'm finally into it. In fact, while you were, you know, I just took a break from writing my recap of the Succession season 3 premiere, which is going to be on Rolling Stone on Sunday night. I think I would probably pick that of the two. But in both cases, if you start, you're going to have moments where you say, why am I watching this? I hate everybody. Why do I care about any of these deals? And at a certain point, in theory, it will click for you.
The other thing I wanted to ask you, you did a review recently of Jon Stewart's new show on Apple TV, I believe.
Yes.
It is. And I, you know, listen, I get that I'm older, so the whole streaming thing is really for people younger than me. But for me, talk shows on streaming services seem bizarre. I don't know why, but for some reason, I just have a hang up about it. So I don't know, because I feel like a talk show should be timely. And I haven't checked out his show. I don't know how timely it is. But I know your review was not exactly glowing of his new show.
Yeah, and well, it's not timely because he's like, I got two episodes in advance that he'd clearly taped a while ago, and he's dealing with relatively timely issues, but not like up to the minute, here's a thing that just happened. It's more, here is a current problem in the world, and we're going to talk about it for 45 minutes.
So what was your big takeaway from the show? Why didn't it work?
I think part of it is just because he's been away for a while. I think all of the people who used to be on his version of The Daily Show have gone off and done their own versions of what this is. They're doing it better. You know, John Oliver and Samantha Bee in particular really kind of have this approach of, we're going to take one issue, focus on it for most of the episode, down to a science. And Stewart is kind of flailing a little bit. I think he's basically banking on goodwill from his original run of The Daily Show, but I don't think the two episodes of The Problem that I've seen, that's the name of the Apple show, were really that great or that polished, certainly compared to, you know, a lot of the competition that he helped create in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned John Oliver. I mean, I guess that's my issue with the Jon Stewart show, is that John Oliver Sunday night, you know, it's going to be about whatever happened that week. You could even, you know, if you watch it on Monday, Tuesday, it's not stale. Whereas on a streaming service, I don't know when it's taped. I don't know what it's covering. I don't, you know, it's a talk show on streaming. I don't know. I have a hang up about that.
Well, I will say in defense of that, though, I mean, a lot of the Last Week Tonight segments, the big thing that they takes up the bulk of the episode is not necessarily about something that happened that week. He will open with, you know, a routine and, you know, talk a little bit about the headlines. But sometimes those deep dives are about things that are not dissimilar to what Stewart is doing. I think the issue is less with the platform and more just with the execution, at least so far. And honestly, the other thing is just like the news these days is so tough that I have a hard time with any of these shows, even the ones that are better done. I just didn't think this was great.
Right. About an hour before we started taping, HBO released the trailer for Curb with the new season coming out October 24th. Did you catch it? Look good. It looked
good.
It
did. It did look good.
Yeah. I'm glad John Hamm is back. I thought he was phenomenal when he was on that last season.
Oh, he was so good. I didn't love every episode last season, but the one he was in was great. The Spite Store finale was really good. You know, it's definitely an uneven show at this point, but if they can do some episodes like those in the new season, I'll be happy.
Yeah, I thought the two best episodes of the last season were by far the John Hamm episode and then the MAGA hat in that season premiere.
Yes, that was good too.
Last thing before we get to The Sopranos, this is more of a business question, so I'm not sure if this is in your territory, but you know, I'm a huge Seinfeld guy, and there's this, you know, there's a whole new push now because it's on Comedy Central and Netflix. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, so is it just that the syndication rights are up like every 5 years or so, and Jerry and Larry get to make more money by, you know, moving it around?
Yeah, that's basically it. Like, you know, Hulu had Seinfeld for a while, I think. I've lost track now, but I believe it was on Hulu. And they signed a deal with Sony and Castle Rock and all the different rights holders, and they get it for X number of years for X number of dollars. And at a certain point, it leaves. And so Friends was like the big hit on Netflix. For all that we talk about Squid Game and Bridgerton and some of these other Netflix originals, the impression I've always gotten is that the really big Netflix hits have always been stuff like Friends, The Office, Breaking Bad, things that they did not create that they just had the streaming rights to for a while. And as each of those goes away and gets bought up by, you know, some new streaming service, they have to go get something else. And the thing about Seinfeld is it was produced by Sony. Sony is one of the few big studios that at least at the moment does not have its own streamer. So it can be a hot potato for a little while, whereas Warner Media is probably never going to let Friends out from under HBO Max again.
Right. And that's why The Office ended up on Peacock, because that was an NBC show.
Exactly.
It's interesting. You know, I'm just thinking about it while you say it. The Office was not highly rated during its original run on NBC, so it would make sense that it would do these massive numbers on Netflix. Friends was very highly rated on NBC and then still did big numbers on Netflix. I'm curious, because Seinfeld, obviously nothing did bigger numbers than Seinfeld during its original run, and the repeats, you know, have been on, it seems like, nonstop on TBS for forever. I wonder what kind of numbers it'll pull on Netflix.
I don't know. I mean, I think part of, just anecdotally, it seemed like a lot of the Friends viewers on Netflix, some of them were people who watched it in the original run and were just turning it to it for comfort food. But it seemed a lot of it was younger viewers who were not either alive or not watching network television at the time when it originally aired. So this was a new show to them and it was very fun. And there was a million episodes of it. And I don't know that Seinfeld is going to have the same appeal. The characters are older. They're all less inherently likable. That's the whole point of the show. No hugs, no learning. And I don't know that it's going to have that same kind of effect of, oh, this is a really fun nostalgia, you know, way to lean back to a time before ours. It's just going to be like four cranky middle-aged people.
Right. And I saw there was a big controversy, I guess, because on Netflix, the
aspect ratio. Yes.
Yes. Is off and people are pissed about that. Which,
yeah, I have not seen any of the episodes myself, but this happened with The Simpsons as well for in the various places it's wound up on streaming. Because when you have those shows from the 90s, right before the HD conversion, they were shot in basically a square looking format. And so when you try to then crop it for widescreen, you're losing part of the image on the top and the bottom. And sometimes like the best part of the joke, you no longer can see. It's a sight gag and it's not there.
Right. Yeah, that was an interesting one when I saw the complaints about that. All right, let's turn to The Sopranos. Before we even get into The Many Saints of Newark, we're 2 days removed from Columbus Day. And a lot of fans think the Columbus Day episode is the worst Sopranos episode of their run. What is your opinion on the worst Sopranos episode or your least favorite Sopranos episode? Would it be Columbus Day or something else?
I think it's Christopher, the Columbus Day episode. Columbus. You know, there have been other ones I liked less previously, but when I went back and rewatched the whole series to write the book, The Soprano Sessions, I like a lot of those went up in my estimation and that one did not. It's just, it's bad for all the reasons I thought it was bad back in, you know, 2002.
It really, like the Silvio character there, just, it made no sense.
Well, it was not written for him. It was supposed to be a Paulie Walnuts episode. And then Tony Sirico, who played Paulie, had to have back surgery and he like missed half the season. And so they said, all right, I guess we'll make it Silvio.
This is why Alan is the best.
I love Steve Van Zandt. You don't want to give him a whole episode.
This is why Alan's the best at The Sopranos. It's a phenomenal nugget to know that. Yeah, because it didn't work at all with Silvio. Speaking of not working, I mentioned this on the podcast last week. A friend of mine texted me. They said 0 to 100. What do you give The Many Saints of Newark? I said a 65. Fair, unfair. I thought it didn't feel anything like the show to me. I thought the second half was much better than the first half. I had some major problems though with some of the things in it. What was your overall impression of The Many Saints of Newark?
I liked the movie. I liked it more than you did, but I also like completely understand why you and why a lot of other people sort of feel frustrated with it. I find parts of it frustrating. I think one of the I reported a lot on the making of the movie for Rolling Stone. I interviewed David Chase, the director, Alan Taylor, all the actors. And one of the things that kept coming up again and again was people would refer to these like great sounding scenes that they shot and got cut. And after this happened a few times, I said to Alan Taylor, well, like, this sounds really good. Why did you get rid of it? And he said, David Chase was adamant. He wanted the movie to only be 2 hours. And so when I sat down with David, I said, you know, why was this? And David essentially said he feels most movies these days are too long and he gets impatient when it gets past 2 hours. And this really feels to me like a movie where there's a 2.5, really probably a 3 hour version of it. That's really, really good. Because you're not like leaping from character to character, you know, idea to idea. You're really sort of like simmering in everything and you're not having to fill in all the blanks yourself. So as a result, like there's just, you can feel the absence of a lot of stuff. There's something in like the second half of the movie where two characters who have basically never been on screen together are suddenly in bed. And you're like, wait, how did that happen?
Right.
I guess I can sort of piece it together. But obviously, they had to cut some stuff out there. Yeah. And the parts that they cut out involving young Tony, young Livia, young Junior, the characters that we know, you can kind of do the mental math in your head anyway, because I know Tony Soprano really, really well. I understand his relationship with his mother. I understand why Uncle Junior is like the most petty and aggrieved human being on the planet. I get all that. So I don't necessarily need all the connective tissue. But the movie is primarily about a bunch of new characters like Dickie Moltisanti and Harold and Giuseppina. And like, I don't know them. And so there I could really use that extra time, you know, if not doing a whole season of TV, because Chase did not want to make a new TV show. He wanted to make a movie, at least give me a longer movie. And I think it would have been more effective.
All makes sense. Yeah, I guess, like I said, I enjoyed the second half more than the first half. I think an hour, 45 minutes to an hour of Ray Liotta was too much for me.
I think he's great in the second half, though. I think that's like some of the best stuff I've ever seen him do.
I want, you know, the thing you heard about the movie going into it for the past couple of months before it was released was all about James Gandolfini's son.
Yes.
And I was looking forward to that, and I thought he was great, but he really, I was shocked at how little he was in the movie. Or, you know, yeah. He was great. I would have liked much more of him than everything else we got.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, this was not designed as the Tony Soprano origin story. That's what it's been marketed as because, you know, Warner Brothers has to sell the movie. And people know Tony and they don't know Dickie Moltisanti. And you've got Gandolfini's son, Michael, playing the part. So it's an easy hook. But no, this is not his movie. He's not even in the first half at all. They've got another actor playing Tony as a kid at that point. No, so it's the Dickie Moltisanti movie. And I think Alessandro Nivola is good as Dickie, but it's just, it's this weird thing where it's both trying to be this standalone movie about Dickie, but there's just enough of the other people in it to make you wish there was a whole lot more of them. Like, I almost feel when I first heard that the idea of the movie, my assumption was that Chase was basically like Livia and Johnny Boy and those people would just be like brief cameos and we would be focusing on others. I think if they had done that, some people would have been frustrated, but like the story he was telling would have felt like it was a little bit more complete than it is. This way, he's sort of trying to do some fan service for the Sopranos fan, with all the Easter eggs and some of the repeated dialogue. And you get these glimpses and you get enough of them to realize, man, you know, Jim Gandolfini's kid is great. Vera Farmiga is great. I want to see more of them. And there's this one stretch of about 10 or 15 minutes late in the movie where it's like Tony goes to the guidance counselor, then Livia talks to the guidance counselor, and then Tony and Livia are in the kitchen. And it's like, boom, boom, boom. I would love a whole movie that was just that. That's clearly not what this movie is trying to be. And right. So again, you're Warner Media selling one movie and then people are seeing another. And I'm sure that is also contributing to some of the sense of disappointment here.
So I mentioned this as well last week in talking about the movie, but this is why I had to have you on, because you'd be the perfect guy to help me with this. The woman who played Livia, I thought was fine, but I didn't think that, to me, the character was nothing like the Livia in the TV show. That's how it came across to me.
Yeah.
But here's what sort of freaked me out. And I don't know if it was intentional or this is just me overthinking and maybe being a weirdo. Especially in those scenes you mentioned where they're in the kitchen, Livia and Tony, and talking about getting on antidepressants and mental health and all that. The woman playing Livia, as Livia, reminded me so much of Carmella and Edie Falco.
Yeah.
And obviously David Chase is all into psychology and mother issues, father issues and all that. And there's all this stuff about you marry your father, you marry your mother. Do we know if that was to me, I kept thinking the mannerisms, the face, the everything was Carmella like. Yeah. Was I off on that or
it's one of the funny thing is when I did this book, The Soprano Sessions, and Matt Seitz and I interviewed Chase a lot, we would constantly ask him about all these weird patterns on the show. Like, you know, every time someone is like making eggs, they're about to die, that kind of thing. And every time we would bring up one of these, he would say, wow, I had no idea. Like that was not in any way something we planned. It just sort of worked out that way while doing a long instinct. And I think the Livia situation is like that, because Vera Farmiga, who plays young Livia, said that the false nose was her idea. She said because she's got a little nose and she wanted to look more like Nancy Marchand. And the fact that it wound up looking more like Edie Falco was not something that was planned. I think David Chase said that to Marc Maron on WTF. Like, okay. He did not realize it until people started pointing it out to him.
But, it hit me right away.
No, it's right there. And The funny thing is, before the kitchen scene, when Livia is going to see the guidance counselor starts relating the story that Tony has told her about the night that she read him the book about the gold rush. And she says, and she's quoting Tony directly, and she says, you snuggled up real close all night. And there's a look on Livia's face like, oh, I didn't realize I was doing that while my husband was away. And so, you know, Tony, I believe, once told Dr. Melfi he never thought about his mother that way, but it's entirely possible she was looking to him as a substitute for her husband. And it's at least implied that something may have happened. We don't know. But the fact that, like, she looks like a dead ringer for the woman he eventually marries, and that they didn't realize that, is another one of those, like, Soprano happy accidents to me.
Okay, because as I'm watching, I'm thinking it's totally intentional and David Chase, you know, doing his thing there. That's fascinating. It's so funny because I've been rewatching some clips on YouTube, and there's a scene later in the seasons when Tony gets the Johnny Sack house for Janice and Bobby, and yes. He's with Melfi talking about Janice, and Melfi goes into this thing about it, you know, being attracted to his sister. He's like, you know, first you have me wanting to bleep my mother, now you having want me to bleep my sister. So it was all in my head, I think, when I was watching it. Speaking of Livia coming off as Carmela-esque, I had read Edie Falco did film something for the movie, ended up not getting used. Do we know what that was?
I know a little bit. The idea was they shot the movie originally in 2019. Then they go to edit it. David Chase looks at an early cut, realizes, okay, we've got, like, the test audiences are confused. We need to add some more stuff to clarify, like, who these people are. So, for instance, Janice's, I think it's her confirmation. That whole scene is new. The reason that the Johnny Boy has a mustache in that scene is because John Bernthal was filming another movie and came over for the afternoon to do it. And so that's new. The scene at the very end, the last thing before the credits roll, is new. And the framing device, the stuff with Christopher, is new. And they basically were trying a lot of different ways to connect the movie to the show. And so one of them is what they ultimately wound up doing. One of them involved Paulie Walnuts. I don't know what that was. And one of them involved Carmela. And I think the idea was she was going to be, like, talking, looking at the camera and telling a story or telling an old joke or something. And then that evolves into, you know, and that, I guess that reminds me of this time, you know, with my cousin Dickie, because she, like, that's how Dickie and Christopher were related to Tony in the first place. They were on Carmela's side of the family.
Right. Two more things before I let you go, sort of on the business side of it. I read that HBO Max just got a massive boom, not from the movie, but now people are rewatching the show.
Yes.
And it kind of, now again, this goes back to me being old and the whole stream. Like, they reran the whole series the week leading up to the premiere. And I love that, because I love being able to sit on the couch, flip on the TV, and it's like, oh, this episode's on, this scene is on, you know, without going through it. I guess it's very intentional on HBO's part not to rerun it live in sort of their rotation and just keep it as something you stream on HBO Max, right? Because they want to keep it fresh. Is that the case?
I mean, I think if you have a cable subscription, you could call up any episode on demand if you're an HBO subscriber.
Yeah.
It's a lot of different ways. I think at a certain point, they assume that with a show this old, if people want to watch it, they will want to do it on their own schedule. But that those marathons leading up to the movie were a way to tease interest in the movie.
The one thing when they said, though, that, you know, so many people are binging it now ahead of the movie, that's not an easy show to binge.
No, because there's a
lot of episodes, and this is not a show where you can start farting around on your phone or you can be distracted. I mean, you got to be locked in to this show.
Yes. And also, and it's an intense show, too. It's you're like Succession and Billions, which you asked me about before. This is another show full almost entirely of bad people. And some of them happen to be really charismatic people who you come to understand because you spend so much time with them. But, like, Tony Soprano is a monster. You know, Paulie Walnuts is, a lot of these people are bad. And, like, Carmela is an enabler. Melfi is basically the best of the bunch, but it's sort of like you're spending a lot of time exploring the psyche of terrible, terrible people. And that's not an easy thing to do in a binge, you know?
Right.
Emotionally, yeah,
I was like, I was shocked, you know, people saying they binge it in a week. How could you binge that show in a week?
No, there's so many, no. You want time to think about every episode. Don't do that.
Yeah. I will say, out of every show I've ever watched, I mean, that was the show by far where on a second watching, third watch, you still pick up so much new stuff, more new stuff than anything.
Yes.
You need multiple viewings.
Every time I watch an episode, I find something new in it. It always makes me happy.
The last thing is, and this is another one on sort of the business end, but I get into this stuff. The reports were that David Chase was pissed at HBO because they launched it on HBO Max simultaneously with launching it in the theaters. I guess he wanted maybe a week in the theaters only. After everything David Chase has done for HBO, they can't give him a week of exclusivity in the movie theaters?
It's part of the every movie that Warner is releasing this year is getting this treatment. Okay. And so the problem is, if they started like giving him a special favor, then every other director, like the guy who made the new Dune, is apparently not pleased that it's getting the same release. So you're going to, and the one thing that Warner can say is, look, we're treating everybody equally. This is just a bad year. This is the way we're getting through it. And we're not doing this again, starting in 2022. And, you know, not coincidentally, the day the movie was released, Warner Media announced that they had signed a new 5-year first look deal with David Chase to develop stuff. And that to me very much read as a thank you for all your service, David. We apologize for not releasing this in theaters only. Here's some money. And ideally, it'll be one of these things, as far as they're concerned, where he will deliver some Sopranos related content. And while David, I'm sure, is looking at the Sopranos related content as the price he has to pay to like make the more personal stories he wants to do at this stage of his life.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And I'm a big fan of you because I got on this podcast a few weeks ago and said, like, you got to see this in the movie theaters. This is a movie theater movie, no distractions, popcorn. And then I watch it at home. So I'm a fraud too.
I saw it just for work purposes. I saw it twice in a screening room on a big screen. I was basically the only one there both times. It played very well at that size. Yeah. And now, like, I'm trying to get my wife to watch it, and we watched like a half an hour so far, and that was like a week ago. So we will eventually get to the rest, but did not at all as David Chase would have wanted anyone to experience it.
Yes, I apologize to David Chase as well. Alan, always phenomenal to have you on and give us some information on this, and I appreciate you taking the time. And the book is The Sopranos Session. So for anyone listening who just started binging it in a week, which I don't know how you guys did that, but you have to get the book as well from my guest here, Alan Sepinwall, the chief TV critic for Rolling Stone. Alan, thanks.
My pleasure, Jimmy.
All right, take care.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, joining me now, weekly Train of Thought segment from WFAN in New York, SNY TV in New York, my buddy Sal Akata. Sal, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm not great.
Why?
I'm a little bummed today.
What happened now?
Well, should I tell this? I'll tell this story. What the hell? I'll tell this story. Basically, you know, over the summer, I read that Curb was coming back for a new season. So I did sort of a full court press to try to get Larry on this podcast. And I know Larry doesn't do interviews, podcasts, all that. He does like when the show comes out, he does like two or three, maybe four interviews. He doesn't do a ton of press. So I knew it was a major long shot. Like, who the hell am I trying to get Larry David on this podcast? Like, you know, am I deranged or whatever? So I sent an email to HBO over the summer. And I actually got a response, and the response was that like Larry's team was interested and wanted to revisit closer to the show's premiere. And I thought I was trying to use the angle of like, you know, Larry's a big sports fan. This is Sports Illustrated. We could talk about sports, you know, and I thought maybe that would intrigue him. I'm sure he doesn't want to hear like, you know, what's your pet peeve, you know?
Right.
So they said Larry's team was interested and we'd revisit. And I was like, ooh, I was all excited. And then, you know, it came out 2 weeks ago or so that there was a premiere date, October 24th. So I emailed again and said, you know, I'm interested, could do it anytime, any day, blah, blah, blah. And then I just heard back yesterday that, you know, we're so sorry, Larry does very minimal press and we're not going to be able to do this.
Oh, man.
And I would have, that response 2 months ago would have been fine and it wouldn't have affected me. But the dangling, the tease for 2 months, the tease for 2 months did a number on me. And then he was on Kimmel last night and he was hysterical. Now, listen, I'm not, I get it. He's on Kimmel. But, you know, when he goes on some other podcast, it's going to be a knife right in the back.
Well, you don't know that he's going to do that. I mean,
I'm sure he's going to do a couple of interviews. He always goes on Eisen and Michael K. Those are the two shows he does.
Center Stage. You see him on Center Stage or the Yes Show or whatever.
Which, okay, I get it. You know, listen, he's not going to be one of these guys that's on every show. Like, you know, when someone has a movie out and they, you know,
Do you think they ran it to him and were like, Larry, Jimmy Traynor from Sports Illustrated, he was like, that guy that harassed me that one night to take a picture of him and his buddy? No way am I doing that.
Yeah, I think they basically said, Larry's going to do two or three interviews and this is not going to be one of them. I think that's really what it comes down to. But what Sal is referring to is, I don't know if I've ever told this story on the podcast before, but back in 2017, I was very, very lucky and fortunate enough to get invited to the Curb Your Enthusiasm season premiere party that HBO was throwing. I think they showed the first two episodes of the season, and then there was a party. Yeah. And I took Sal because Sal loves Larry and
plus one, baby. I was a plus one. That what a great time. We saw the two episodes.
It was not a great time. It was not a great time.
Oh no, come on. It was uncomfortable.
So we go to the after party and the whole cast is there, like mingling around, you know, not barricaded off.
Susie was there.
Not separated from the riffraff like us. And at one point in the night, I don't even know how it happened, but at one point of the night, and I stayed away from Larry. I was going to bother Larry, like, you know. But at one point of the night, you turned around and there was like a line of people, like probably like 50 deep of people going to Larry for a picture. And I never, ever do that with celebrities. I don't care about pictures. And I never do it. I don't know what possessed me. I had an out-of-body experience, and I got on that line. And it was one of the worst decisions I've ever made in my life. So I get on the line.
So awkward.
Sal gets on the line. And this isn't going to work on a podcast at all, so I apologize in advance. But maybe I'll put on. But Sal got a picture with Larry that I took, and it came out great. And then I got a picture with Larry that's the single worst picture that's ever been taken of a human being ever. Like,
I'm sorry.
It's sideways. He's looking in the other direction. I look like a stalker. It is so, that picture is so vile for so many reasons. And I have PTSD from that night.
It's not that bad, but even hearing you talk about it gives me like anxiety of just the uncomfortableness that I felt. Now it was cool.
Because Larry, but people have done this. This looked like the very last thing in the world Larry wanted to do.
And by the way, even in my picture, which is a decent one, he still did not look like he wanted to take the picture. He was just like, yeah, whatever. And that's why I think that the bad picture happened. We were kind of frazzled. It was such a rush. He was in the middle of being bothered by us and others. And it was just like, let's try to get this picture going. I don't know if it was moving or what. What a disaster. Even before that, remember we met like Aziz Ansari was there and he was rude to me. He wouldn't take a picture. We didn't belong. But while I'm there, I'm like, all right, might as well. We saw Dr. Melfi, who could not be nicer. You got a great picture with
Lorraine Bracco. Yes. That was a great picture with Lorraine Bracco. She was very nice to us.
My wife was jealous of that picture, saying, why are you so, because our cheeks were together. I was like, this is it, Dr. Melfi.
Yeah.
She was great. We talked to her for a little bit. There were other people there too.
And it wasn't that Larry wasn't great. This is not what this guy wants to be doing.
And we knew
and
that.
And he wasn't rude. He wasn't mean. It wasn't anything like that. It was just, you know, like, why are people lining up to take a picture with this guy who you know he doesn't want to take?
So we knew, and even I think we said, I know you don't want to do this, but, which is, it's an uncomfortable feeling. I'm embarrassed for both of us, but we had to do it. And I got,
I'm so traumatized picture. From this. I'm sweating now. Just think, oh my God.
You have to post these pictures. I haven't seen the one of you for a while, but
yeah, let's burn that.
So,
one.
So awful.
So that's, so no Larry on the SI Media podcast. I'd be curious. I'm very curious though, to see what other shows he does. I'm going to be obsessed with finding that out.
Well, what podcast is he going to do if he's not doing sports stuff? Yeah. What would
there's only 9 billion podcasts. I'm sure he'll find one to do.
But which one is he going to do that's going to, you know, that would bother you that he does? Do you have Bill Simmons podcast? I don't even know.
No, that wouldn't bother me. I don't know. It's just a bummer. Like I said, I would have liked to have been told no 2 months ago instead of the,
right.
You know, and I didn't want to tell people because I knew this was going to happen. I think I told like maybe 2 people that, you know, it might happen. So
you shot your shot. It's okay.
Yeah, it happens. They dropped the trailer today. Did you see it for the new season?
I did not. I saw you tweet it. I did not watch it yet. Yeah, I've been on baby good. Duty today, so I'll have to check that out.
One other TV question as part of this train of thought segment here, because I got into this a little with Alan Sepinwall, and I'd be fascinated because you have interesting television taste. Have you watched Squid Game?
No, not yet. But usually what happens with these type of shows, and I know this probably is, you have zero interest, right? Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it. It's not that I have zero interest. I mean, I feel like I have to watch it now. It's just, right. You know, it's hard for me to start binging a show in the middle of football season and MLB playoffs.
Yeah, if not impossible. I mean, the shows that I actually like watching, and then I hear about this. Now, I will check it out. Generally, what happens if a show gets so big like that, and it'll be a show that I'll watch with my wife and say, hey, this show is blowing up. Let's see what it's all about. So I'm intrigued by what it is, but on the surface, it does not necessarily look like something that I might love. And the craze is a little bit much. You know, it's kind of, I know it's not the same, but remember Tiger King gets blown out of proportion. Everybody's right. All right. So you feel obligated to watch it. Then I watch it and say, why the hell am I wasting my time watching this crap when there's 9 billion other things I could be watching that's more entertaining.
Right. Now, another thing I want to discuss with you, I don't think we're really even going to discuss anything sports related in this segment today, because quite frankly, I don't want to talk about Gruden and Schefter and anything else that's going on. But this is way more interesting. If you listen to this podcast last week, if you listen to Train of Thoughts last week, at the very end, it was like a cliffhanger where Sal was ranting and raving because he was going to miss his NFL Sunday because him and his wife were having a baby celebration.
Baby blessing.
On Sunday at 1 o'clock, right in the middle of what might have been the best 1 o'clock slate of the season, the way it turned out with the games. You had the Packers with all the missed field goals and the Packers Bengals, I should say, and a couple other games going down to the wire. And then 4 o'clock was obviously great with the Charger game. Brady with another that was at 1 o'clock. Brady with another out of his mind performance. Mm-hmm. How did it all work out for you, Sal?
So two stories. One, I mean, just the whole day, I'm thinking, all right, well, I'm going to have time to watch the Falcons and Jets uninterrupted. Wrong.
9:30.
Yeah, wrong, because it's the morning of. So now you got to plan, prepare. My wife is out getting her hair done and makeup, and the cake's got to be delivered, and the food's got to. So there's no way I got to get ready and get dressed and haircut. I managed my time well enough to where I watched the entire game, just not uninterrupted. You know, I wasn't downstairs alone by myself. I had the baby a little bit. I was watching the beginning downstairs. Then I had to go up and use the iPad as I'm getting ready, whatever. Fine. No problem. Two issues. One, the in-laws show up. No joke. The first thing
Be careful.
You're going to love this. First thing they say is, oh, so a friend of mine showed me this clip that you were on a podcast that you did. Well, don't worry. We'll be out of here by 4:20 or 4 o'clock. I was like, no. It's just a joke. You don't really have to leave by 4 or 5. You know, I just exaggerate for effect.
But deep down you were like, oh, I'm glad they saw that clip. Get the hell out of my house.
They know me well enough. And it was at that moment that I was thinking, you know what? Who am I to be so self-centered? They're inconvenienced too. They don't want to be here. Forget about football. You think people actually want to get up on a Sunday and drive 2 hours to come out to Long Island to be to a baby blessing? No. So I'm inconvenienced for a different reason, but they're inconvenienced too. I did them a favor by saying you need to leave by 4:25. They had an easy excuse. They were out the door by 4:20. I was like, you guys sure you don't want to stay and watch the game? I mean, it's a big game. Cowboys, Giants.
I feel they were out of there by 4:20.
I would say by 4:25.
Then I feel like you owe me one. I feel like I helped you get them out of there.
But when I tell you I was, and you know me, I don't really get embarrassed. Like, I generally don't care. I mean, other than that Larry David situation, but I wouldn't normally care. I was embarrassed and almost mortified that they were like, oh, so we heard that You want us to leave by 4 o'clock.
So who's stalking you on this podcast and sending out
one
clips?
One of my brother-in-law's friends is a big fan of yours. He's a big fan of me. He listens to your podcast. And so obviously gets a kick out of the segment.
One of your brother-in-law's friends. Okay.
He listens every week. And he saw the clip that you posted. Yeah, because I'm thinking, who the hell is listening? You know, I'll do this bit on the radio.
But well, here's the thing. If these people are listening again this week, but you have to understand this. This is not personal. Sal and I wouldn't want anyone in our houses on a Sunday. It has nothing to do with you specifically. You're not that special. Right. It's nobody. We don't want anybody. There's nobody we want to be bothered with on a Sunday except for Joe Buck and Jim Nantz. That's about it.
Right. So my whole day was ruined. I'll give you one more quick one on that. So the party's going on, food is served, whatever. And now I have the Bengals and Packers on upstairs. That's a local game. And clearly the game was an exciting game, as you mentioned. So my focus is kind of there. I'm making sure everybody's okay, whatever. You know, the ceremony's over. People just hanging out, and I'm watching the game. And right as the Bengals are going for the two-point conversion to tie the game, I'm focused on that. I'm looking at my fantasy on my phone. I'm trying to get, you know, the Sunday intake going. And my wife's like, "Hey, so you want to go do the cake now? You got to cut the cake." And I must have not even heard her. Like, I was in a – and she goes, "Is now not a good time because of football?" I go, "It's Sunday. Sunday's not a good time because of football. You made this party on a Sunday. The whole day is not a good time. It's football Sunday. Can I watch the two-point conversion, please? These missed field goals left and right, two-point conversion, tie close game, and you want me to go over there and cut the cake?" And I go, "Cut the cake for what? What's the candle in the cake? This is a birthday party. It's a baby blessing."
You remind people how old your daughter is?
She's 6 months. Did she, it's a blessing.
Was she able to blow out the candle?
And then I was, no, she, yeah, exactly. So I was asking my wife in front of people, frustrated. And it's a bad job by me, but I'm like, what is the point of this? Of the candle, who's gonna blow it out?
Well, I tried to be a good friend, and I kept texting you throughout the day. Be careful, be nice. You just got to suck it up. Clearly, it didn't really work.
No, well, that was the one maybe sensitive area, but everything outside of that was fine.
Is there anything you want to say in case any brother-in-law, friends, whoever are listening now, just get it over with?
I love my in-laws, all of them, and I do appreciate them coming and dealing with my idiosyncrasies and, you know, neuroticness as a sports fan.
He just doesn't love you on a Sunday afternoon during the NFL season.
Here's one more thing. If you have
Sunday in February,
plan,
come on over.
Yeah, right. If you have any parties to plan, don't do it in the fall on a Sunday, please. Thank you. If you want me to be there anyway.
Oh, God, that's too good. It's too good. It's too
Yeah, all good. True.
I really don't have any other like sport. I'll give you one thing I saw. I saw this literally right before we started taping, and I'm amazed that now I'm not a hockey guy. So maybe I'm not getting hockey information the way a hockey fan is. But I just saw this. Gary Bettman said, I think he said it today, maybe that's why it's not a big story yet. There are only 4 players in the entire league who are not vaccinated.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
In comparison to the NBA, because I saw that too, and I thought that, wow, this is pretty good. And then I'm thinking, well, who are the 4 players? They have to feel, you know, kind of left out. And are they allowed to play? I guess they are in certain.
I don't know, but I just, the fact that they got every single player in the NHL vaccinated except for four is unbelievable.
What's the deal with the NFL in comparison? I mean, are we down?
The NFL numbers were pretty good. I mean, there was a story at one point that some players were using like fake vaccine cards, but I don't know. But, you know, like the Bucks were at 100%.
Right.
And I know a lot of teams were in like the 90s.
Right. So, and then what about the NBA? Obviously, we know Kyrie's not vaccinated, but what's the number?
I think the NBA is in better shape than, you know, like Kyrie is getting all the headlines, but like the Lakers were 100%.
Right.
You know, that came out.
Knicks are 100% because you got to be able to do that in New York. There's no issue there.
Right.
I just, it sounds great. Like, wow, only 4 players. But are we similar with the NBA? I mean, what are we looking at? 10, 15 players? Who's not vaccinated? In the NBA.
That's a good question that I'm not really paying that close attention. I know the numbers have been good across the board with sports in terms of compared to the rest of society.
Well,
where it's like 70%.
The other thing that's confusing is there are different rules everywhere. So obviously if, and I don't know this to be true, I'm just throwing out a name. Let's say Oklahoma City. If you play for the Thunder, maybe you don't need to be vaccinated to play. Obviously for Brooklyn in New York, you need to be vaccinated to participate at least in home games. So that's the issue.
Yeah.
So maybe there
we are both in New York. I mean, how do you think the Kyrie thing plays out? Like, do you think they'll trade him?
Now I would. Because not just because of this, just because it seems to always be something with Kyrie Irving. Plus, they have Harden and Kevin Durant. Look, I respect anybody's decision. I would never tell anybody you're forced to get this and go do that. But he, at some point, he's, you want him to be somebody else's headache. I don't know, though, if they're going to get to that point. You know, they're hoping that something changes, whether he gets the vaccine or whether the rules change. And I wouldn't hold my breath for either of those two.
So well, what are they going to do? I think he hurt himself a lot with the statement on Tuesday that came out, which we don't even know if it's true, because that was shady in and of itself about he's not anti-vax. He's mad about the mandates. Okay. So you're mad about the mandates, but you're still not vaccinated. You're not going to get vaccinated because you're mad about that did not help his cause. I thought that's like, if you wanted to sit there and say, yeah, listen, I'm anti-vax, I'm not putting this in my body, blah, blah, blah. I think that's ridiculous, but I can tolerate that more than, well, I'm trying to be a hero for people who are losing their jobs because of mandates, so I'm not getting vaccinated. That makes no sense to me at all. I don't understand what one has to do with the other.
And by the way, I didn't hear, I mean, you're right, that was the report. I didn't hear it come from his mouth. I mean, if that
why
wouldn't he just say that from the opening press conference in preseason where he's like, I don't want to talk about it, it's a personal decision. Why wouldn't you just come out and say, I don't think this is right for this reason, and this is why I'm doing this, this to be a voice for those people who unfortunately don't have the platform or the money that I do. So I don't know.
The other thing too is like the season starts next week. So if there's even like a 1% chance that at some point you're going to get vaccinated, like do it now. Why would you want to miss games? Like, listen, if you're never going to do it, then that's fine. Just go retire or whatever, or demand a trade so you don't have to deal with the issues. But like if he gets his shot, let's say, you know, December 18th, like then you went through all this for nothing. Like either do it or get out.
And see, that's my issue with Kyrie Irving. You kind of touched on it, where it seems to me, and this is his choice, I really don't care. I care about what goes on the basketball court. I'm in sports talk. That's what we do. If you have other passions and other priorities in life, which it seems like he does, then go do it. But then don't, I don't care about that. I care about what you do with the Brooklyn Nets or what you do with whatever team you're on. So if you want to go be some kind of hero and be an advocate for this or that, or go try to help, I respect that greatly. But go do it. We're focused on what's going on in the NBA because that's what we do as sports.
Yeah, fans. I mean, the problem is he's got 11 other people who rely on him. That's what the issue is.
Which is why I'm glad that the Nets finally took a stance on this instead of letting Kyrie Irving run things and dictate things and saying, right, I need time away from the team last year, and he go and celebrate his sister's birthday. But meanwhile, he's mentally not ready to play basketball. The NBA regular season is minimized as it is. And how disrespectful can you be if you're Kyrie Irving, just saying, oh, it doesn't really matter. I'll show up in the playoffs. Maybe if I decide to get vaccinated then, or if the rules change. Well, good for the Nets as an organization and as a team where they say, no, you're not going to be a part-time player and practice part-time and play on the road with us. You're either in or you're out. And right now,
I didn't even think of that. Yeah, maybe he's waiting it out for when the mandates are lifted.
I mean, that is one option, right?
Yeah, yeah. But who knows when that's going to be? Yeah, who knows when that's going to be?
I wouldn't wait for that.
But yeah, but I really just, I wanted to give a shout out to the NHL. The fact that there are only four players in the entire league not vaccinated. I thought, I'm surprised it doesn't get more headlines, but it's the NHL. So, you know, it is what it is.
Right.
All right. Appreciate it. This Sunday, no distractions. Locked in.
Yeah, I'll be locked in. If you want, you're invited to come over. I may have a couple other people coming. And it's
9:30. There's a 9:30 game.
Forgot about that. Well, it is Miami and Jacksonville, right? The 9:30 game.
It is. It is.
Yeah. It's not really.
But there'll be no distractions.
No, I will be. It's back to normal. You said, when are you going to get over this? When things get back to normal, this Sunday is when I will be able to put the baby blessing behind me.
That was good. When I said you got to get over it, and you said I'll get over it on Sunday when this football. Oh, God. All right. Sal, take it easy.
We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye. All right. That wraps it up for this episode of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. My thanks to John Oran, Alan Sepinwall, and Sal Licata. If you missed previous episodes of the pod, go into the archives, check them out. Kyle Brandt from Good Morning Football was on the podcast last week. Stephen A. Smith was here 2 weeks ago. Brian Danielson from AEW Wrestling, also known as Daniel Bryan, 3 weeks ago. Jimmy Kimmel and Tony Romo, all recent guests on this Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. So if you're not a subscriber, hit that subscribe button and leave a review on Apple. I will read it on one of these pods when we get some time. All right, that wraps it up. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and take care.
At Bet365, 365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.